your beautiful cheeks. You have strong hands with which to build freeways. You saved New York from so many things, like poverty and having to see poverty. Thank you, Robert Moses. Thank you, you beautiful king. Thank you, Robert Moses. America owes you everything, everything. Your warm smile lights up the sky at night. I love your bridges in that one park next to the tunnel. You have such a way with building things and freeway-related activities. Thank you, Robert Moses. Thank you, you beautiful king. Thank you, Robert Moses. America owes you everything, everything.
Thank you, Aaron. I'm Robert Moses. I love you.
Thank you.
For tuning in to another installment of Are You Into Bus Stuff, the only comedy podcast about dying in traffic. Today we have a very special guest joining us on the podcast. We have Pondless of social media and music fame. Pondless makes some of the freshest music about our violent and confusing and disorienting and often absurd city infrastructure and transportation systems and just the whole world. I highly encourage you to listen to his work. You can find him on Spotify or Linktree. We'll drop that in the show notes after the episode. But yeah, we're super excited to have him on. So it'll be a fun little episode.
You sent the link. No. I'm just like,
if you read,
it's not about what I sent this time. I tried to join the meeting like 30 minutes ago. It wouldn't let me join. I thought you weren't in there. So I've just been chilling in my fucking apartment.
Okay, it's fine. I'm just grumpy because I worked a full day. I just rushed, set all my stuff up because I thought we wanted to record for 30 minutes. I thought you wanted to do our favorite podcast.
You could have just texted me.
And then I was sitting there alone and I'm like, I guess Ben doesn't want to do my favorite podcast anymore. I got sad.
I hate this fucking podcast. I hate everything. I've been so fucking miserable. Who even is this schlub?
This is Pondless.
Who is this goon?
This is Pondless.
He better goon.
I think he will not disappoint.
I need a real sicko after the day I've had.
Excellent. Well, I am looking forward to the conversation. I think there's a lot of alignment here. I have no idea how this conversation's going to go. we're very strange and I think off-putting, and I would describe Pondless as very strange and off-putting, and I say that with all the love in the world.
Good.
But I think that we have just a lot of alignment. We're not taking a direct approach to roadway safety. We're not putting on sparkly vests and saying the same neutered, boring language that they've been saying for decades out there. We are doing something new.
I've got a few, I got a couple traffic deaths I did want to talk about. You think we can squeeze it in before he gets here?
I think we'd definitely squeeze a roadway death in. I mean, hey, we make a dollar every time this happens, so.
So a little boy was hit by a car on his bicycle in a crosswalk, kind of close to where I grew up. Round Rock ISD fourth grader dies after being hit by a vehicle in a crosswalk. Remember, the object is the fourth grader and the subject is the driver who killed him. Remember, every single time. Round Rock ISD fourth grader dies after being hit by a vehicle in a crosswalk, Terra Vista principal says. So everybody pour one out for, let's see, Patrick. Everybody pour one out for Patrick, who was just doing exactly what he was supposed to, crossing the street in a crosswalk with a helmet on when he was crushed to death by an adult.
And mind you, listener,
and, this driver was not cited. I want to make that clear. It's
not cited at all.
Even if you do everything right, no one will get in trouble if they.
They didn't even write him a ticket.
No enforcement action has been taken at this time.
Did they write a ticket? Did they write Patrick a ticket? I mean, that's an insult that we hear of a lot in this line of work. Is someone who gets crushed, mowed down by a 2-ton machine, and then the cops have the audacity to cite that person with a crime?
Oh, it's even better when they cite the parents of the dead kid. That's my favorite. That's my personal favorite. I had another traffic death. So Lucas and I got an email the other day to sit in on a webinar for like a crash analysis after a cyclist died at Denson and Guad.
His name was Paul.
He was a volunteer at the Yellow Bike Project. Supposedly a pretty cool guy. But I don't know. I sat in on this fucking thing where they're talking about how this guy died. And I don't know, man. It was just kind of making me upset. Because they were saying shit like, oh, I can't imagine what that guy who killed him must be feeling. You know, he's got to live with the guilt.
That's true.
Right, he's gonna live.
That's true. That would be terrible. That would be terrible.
No, and so this guy was just going straight in the bike lane, and someone turned through it and crushed him to death. And again, the guy wasn't cited. And it's like, what do you have to do to get in fucking trouble killing a cyclist? Like, what on earth would it possibly take? Do you have to be drunk? It's like, if you just turn through someone's lane and kill them, it's like, what the fuck? What more do you need to punish someone?
Yeah, for malfeasance, for being a public nuisance, for operating a piece of machinery that is not a necessary piece of machinery and murdering someone with it on accident or on purpose. And mind you, I mean, Ben Carnero was an RRISD fourth grader at one point. If we continue to mow down the youth of America, you're not going to have podcasters like Ben in the next generation.
Those were some pretty high-profile traffic deaths in my community of late. Two instances where you can sort of just murder a cyclist in their lane. You can just drive into their lane and kill them, and it's not your fault. You won't get in trouble. Just do whatever you want. Fuck it. No one fucking cares, I guess. No one fucking cares. Just kill a cyclist. Do it. They're fucking gay. Do it. That little boy, he deserves it. Come on. He's asking for it. Look at him. That little boy. Local fourth grader. More like local roadkill.
I got to face roadway violence in my neighborhood. I haven't been able to figure out what happened. I couldn't find any details, but a car was flipped over right in front of the Trader Joe's, and they had clearly cut the roof off of it to get the person out. So I assume that they were alive if they bothered to do that, at least when they were getting into the ambulance. I couldn't find any news reporting or anything to determine whether someone lived or died. I need to dive back into it. It's been probably 24 hours since I looked, but yeah, that was on Saturday at the corner of 8th and Colorado. There's a Roadway Report sticker on every corner of that intersection. So yeah, it was just, it's always shocking. I got home, I was like shaking, and he was like, "What happened?" And I showed her the picture, and yeah, just a bummer.
I've been thinking of getting a Jeep, some kind of Jeep Wrangler or Ford Bronco, and I want to drive it fast in a pedestrian mall.
You should do that. And while you do that, shall we let the door open for our esteemed guest?
Yeah, let him in. Let him in.
All right, let's do it.
Well, well, well.
Well, we are super excited to welcome our esteemed guest to the podcast. The one, the only, Pondless. Welcome, Pondless, to Are You Into Bus Stuff?
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're big fans of what you do. So I just wanted to kind of kick it off. We played the listener some sweet tunes of yours a little bit earlier, particularly Thank You, Robert Moses. So the listener is a little bit acquainted with your work. So I'm curious, like, how you got into doing what you're doing, and, you know, what led you to kind of create the type of work that you've been making the last couple years.
Yeah, great question. I'm a musician and a pianist, and I teach piano, and I went to music school and the whole thing, and I grew up in Los Angeles, and then when I went to college, I moved to Boston, and I was like, whoa, this is different, and immediately was like, it just totally changed my mindset about the world, and then I was writing songs and doing that whole thing, and at a certain point, just every song I was writing was about urban planning, and... You know, I there's a little bit of me that is doing it because, you know, I really care about it and everything like that, but I really just am really obsessed, I'm sure as you guys are, of course, obsessed with urban planning, obsessed with cities, obsessed with all these things, so it was just like, how could I do anything else than make music about urban planning?
Absolutely, and marry that. I would say Ben is probably obsessed with yelling at cars and gooning. Would you say that's fair, Ben?
Wow.
Yeah, that's probably a fair assessment. I don't know. I got red-pilled because I tried to do the right thing. I live in Austin, and I was like a young, naive guy who just wanted to ride a bike to work and like try to not contribute to climate change. And... it has been an uphill battle for the last 12 years living in Texas.
Yeah.
It's like really, really radicalizing. That's kind of my origin story.
Yeah, we shared just a little bit ago about a fourth grader in the neighborhood that Ben and I went to high school. There was a fourth grader who was murdered by a car in the crosswalk, crossing completely legally, following every letter of the law. A fourth grader just trying to get around that was mowed down. The person that killed them has not, there's been absolutely no charges pressed, and they were not cited at all. So it's heartbreaking, right? So I would say that it leads me to my next question, which is, what is the best city to die in traffic? If you had to die in traffic in any city, which would it be? You compared LA to Boston a moment ago. So I'm wondering, where's the best place to die in traffic and where's the worst place to die in traffic?
Okay, well, speaking of LA, I would say best place has to be Los Angeles. Because number one, cars are gonna be fucking going fast. Oh, sorry, can I swear?
You can fuck. Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
Okay, all right.
It's required.
All right, I'd say the best place is probably Los Angeles because cars are gonna be going really fast and you're gonna die quick. But you know, if you can pick a spot, if you can pick like right on PCH, looking over some cliffs and looking over the ocean, that's a perfect place to die in traffic. That's my opinion.
Have you ever seen the movie It's a Mad, 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 Mad World?
Oh, I haven't, but I've heard about it.
The opening scene of the film is someone, they're driving in Southern California, and somebody drives off like a ledge, And as he lay dying from the car accident, a group of bystanders goes down and they're like, "Are you okay, man?" And he's like, "I've got a bunch of money buried under a big W." And then the whole film is those people trying to find this dead man's money.
Wow.
But that's what that reminded me of.
That's
yeah, it also, I think there's a lot of classic Hollywood that would reinforce your assertion here that L.A. is the best place to die in traffic. I'm thinking of Rebel Without a Cause, where they're playing chicken and then they drive off the cliff, like over the ocean. That would be a sick way to die in traffic.
100%. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be the way to go, honestly. Yeah, going right over a cliff, straight into the ocean, straight into whatever's below. That sounds beautiful.
Okay, so I'm curious, what is the worst place to die in traffic? Is it Boston, where like you can make a left turn whenever you want, or is that the worst? Are they like binaries against each other?
Yeah,
or
no,
where's the worst place to die?
Definitely, yeah, I would say Boston's the worst city in the U.S. to die in traffic. I mean, going from speed. In Boston, it's got to be the opposite of Los Angeles, where people are driving, you know, really slow. I mean, they're driving fast for Boston, but Boston's got crazy narrow streets, so anything's going to be fast. And but when you get hit by a car in Boston, they're not going fast enough to kill you instantly. And then they're going to just...
That's a very important question. Have you been hit by a car?
I haven't been hit by a car, actually. No.
Have you come close?
I have come close many times, yeah. Never my own fault.
We don't really assign fault on this podcast. We don't blame the dead. We only mourn and goon yeah. for the dead.
In addition to gooning for the dead and making this horrible broadcast, the worst podcast on television, some people call it, we also run a website called Roadway Report, roadway.report, if you plug it into your browser, where we are recording every traffic death. It's a nationwide Vision Zero map with a ton of data resources and tools that we work with like advocacy organizations to help them pull interesting visualizations to like lobby their local governments to make things safer and to invest more in anti-car infrastructure or, you know, people-oriented infrastructure. So that's like the other thing that we do. I wasn't sure how much research you did on us, but
it's not. Yeah, we don't know what you know about us, but whatever you do, it's not true.
Yeah, I hadn't.
Whatever you do, go ahead.
Yeah, I hadn't seen about that. That's really cool. I'm gonna have to look into that. That's something, you know, I live in New York and I work in Queens, and the neighborhood that I work in is kind of very mixed in terms of whether it's car oriented or pedestrian oriented. There's giant roads, there's really narrow streets, there's like bike only streets, which is awesome. But actually, like just the other day, I was walking on a street right next to, like, parallel to the bike-only street in the neighborhood, and this car went left, almost just barely not hitting me, and then, like, slammed on their brakes and then honked at me. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you, man? Like, Jesus. But just, like, you can see how as places are slowly doing these things, you know, some places are able to really improve themselves and become, you know, very pedestrian oriented, very nice places to walk on, and some places are still lagging behind.
Yeah, I had a close call for the first time in a while the other day. I was, so I live in East Central Denver, and I was biking northbound on Cherry Street, and I had to cross 13th Avenue. So 13th Avenue is a one-way road that is two lanes. So anyways, I pulled up to 13th Avenue on my bicycle, and the street narrows. There's actually plastic bollards and paint that like bump out the intersection. So they've like started to try to do something at this intersection. And a truck pulls up behind me, and I'm waiting for traffic to clear. And it's like 5:30. So it's really, there's a lot of traffic. There's a lot of people trying to get home from their jobs and from their days. And I'm waiting there for probably 15, 20 seconds. And I'm like in the middle of the lane, more or less. And the truck pulls up behind me. He creeps up on me, like gets right up to my back tire. So I kind of hop out of the way to the right because he thinks that I'm being like overcautious in trying to cross the street. And I get out of the way. He pulls in front of me and then he almost just drives directly into oncoming traffic. And I'm standing right behind him, you know, so if he gets clipped and I get tackled by that truck, who knows? And it just goes to show that whether, you know, you have, a bikeway in your neighborhood that is a bike street only, right? Or whether you've started to introduce this infrastructure, the motor vehicle is the dangerous element. The car is what is dangerous. And until we do something about everybody driving a 2-ton tank around, we're going to have a hard time. It's going to be an uphill battle.
Definitely.
Yeah, Queens is a fucking case study in, like, the sufficient density to support alternative means of transportation, but just having the other form anyway. Yeah. Like, Queens could be nice. Mm-hmm. That's what's so sad about it.
No, definitely.
In a lot of ways it is. I mean, Forest Hills,
Yeah.
You gotta have money, but...
Yeah, but I mean, Forest Hills even, like, right down the middle of it is Queens Boulevard, and it's... Queens Boulevard is, like, you know, I 30 meters wide, some crazy, probably not 30 meters, that feels too wide, really wide.
That sounds about right, it is like 100 feet wide.
Okay, yeah, then maybe it is.
It's massive.
There's a subway in the middle, and then like four lanes on each side.
It's so wide, they could put buildings in the middle of it, and there'd still be plenty of room for cars and everybody.
You hear that, government?
So tell us
what we're asking for here.
You said you were living in Manhattan?
Sorry, no, I live in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, and you're working in Queens. It sounds like a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, I live on the G train, which is kind of the only thing that connects Brooklyn and Queens.
Thank God. So yeah, you only take two trains, better. Not three.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not great. I mean, the transfer off of the G train is pretty awful. But I mean, what can you do? At least I have a train that I can take. You know.
That transfer's fun. You're like walking in a tunnel that's full of people. It's very New York.
Definitely.
What's your day job? Because are you a working musician?
Yeah, I'm a piano teacher, and I play in gigs and that sort of thing as well. And in addition,
I feel like you'd have to teach like 100 hours of piano a week to live in New York City.
Yeah. It's a lot. Yeah.
Where'd you go to music school? You went in Boston, you said.
What's that?
You said you went to school in Boston.
Yeah. I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Isn't that where Eric Andre went to school?
Yeah, man. Best alumni, number one.
Are you severely autistic?
I don't know. I've never gotten a diagnosis.
As someone who runs an interactive web map of every traffic death in the United States, I've never been diagnosed with any kind of anything, any kind of spectrum. But I'm suspicious.
Yeah.
I try to be a pretty charismatic guy, and I am an actor. I'm a writer. Like, I do a lot of feelings based and like social based things. But whenever I bring up my involvement in this topic, either the podcast or the death map, people say, "Oh, so that's like your special interest. That's your, you know, so you're like one of those." And I'm like, "Yeah, I guess so. I guess so."
Non-neurodivergent people are allowed to have a special interest. That's our hot take.
I agree.
Only hot neurodivergent people.
That's
only gooners.
Honestly, that leads into my next question perfectly. Go ahead, Ben. You go, 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 go.
I was going to say, our podcast is ostensibly about transportation and urban planning, but we double as a support group, as like a 12-step support group for severe gooning addicts. So if at any point you want to pivot to that, we can, but we can keep things on the rails if we need to.
Yeah, whenever you need to get into that.
Thank you for making space for our community. The gooner army certainly appreciates it, which leads perfectly into my next question, which is, you know, as we're getting into the topic of you know, being hot and sex and gooning. What is the sexiest urban planning concept? What is the, like, silky smoothiest? Your work also, I mean, the vibes, the funk, the soul, the sexy tunes that you bring to our ears. I want to know what really gets you going in terms of urban planning.
I mean, I'd say the biggest thing that gets me going is definitely the fact that Robert Moses is dead. After that, I mean, I'd say my favorite urban planning topic is infill development. Improving our cities by filling in parking lots and building in places that are already urbanized and ready to go. We just have to fill in the gaps. This is like my favorite thing. I think about it all the time. Everywhere I go, every time I see a parking lot, I'm just like, now imagine if this was apartments. That'd be way better.
Yeah, and apartments without mandatory parking spaces.
Yeah, good point, good point.
Yeah, no, I think that while a little less sexy than Robert Moses's corpse, I would agree that's something that I can get behind.
Look, any corpse gets me going, but his particularly.
Yeah.
No, that is a really sexy concept. We talk about the externalities of traffic violence a lot on this podcast, not to mention any kind of concern for the environment or climate change, right? Yeah, infill development gets a bad rap in the sort of in the local politics sphere.
Mm.
Nobody
wants... neighborhood, I don't want any poor people in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Waiter, can you come out here? I saw that man in his backyard over there is building a housing unit. I'm just worried that it'll house a person that maybe would loiter outside and obstruct my view. So could you go and kill that homeowner for me?
Yeah, definitely.
There are more public housing units in New York than there are housing units in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, what is the number of public housing units in New York? I'm pretty sure it's like hundreds of thousands, maybe like
it's
over,
like a milli.
Is it over a million?
It's about a milli, I think.
That sounds about
That's
right.
A great question.
I think it's like one in ten housing units.
I'm gonna put my Jane Jacobs hat on for a second and my Alva Gottby hat on for a second. So Life and Death of American Cities, Jane Jacobs, highly recommend for reading. As well as what is it called? It's called Being at Home, or we'll link in the show notes, but it's Alva Gottby is the writer, and it's a contemporary, it's a like a sort of Marxist feminist take on the housing problem. But she talks about the nature of public housing and like projects that were built in New York City. You know, think about like Queensbridge housing, the Queensbridge houses and things like that. Yeah, I mean, they really did those folks dirty. Like, that was definitely an example of public housing being an urban renewal, right, quotes, being used to, like, further oppress already downtrodden people. So, hell yeah, public housing, but we got to make better social public housing.
Definitely, yeah. And, I mean, in my neighborhood, there's a housing project just a few blocks from me, and it really acts as kind of a barrier in many ways because of the way it's designed. It's very insular, number one, and there's just nothing fronting the street other than like fences and like excessively large courtyards and parking lots and stuff like that. Things that courtyards that are not attractive, by the way, I should mention that. It's, you know, it's great that there is public housing. It's obviously something we desperately need everywhere in the U.S. But it's a way that divides communities and makes neighborhoods just worse overall.
Yeah, I agree, and I think what's beautiful about Gottby's book is she takes a lens to the housing question that asks, how do we make housing that makes the act of reproductive labor easier? How do we make living better by creating housing that is not in the traditional forms? And that's a difficult question to answer, because a lot of people who will access public housing are people that are outside of the social norms and the ways that people organize themselves around housing, because we typically organize our housing around our like primary relationships in our life, right? The prescribed like plan is you meet someone, you get married, and then the two of you maybe can afford a house. That's becoming less and less true. But we need to think about ways where communities of people that are not in necessarily personal relationship with one another can build community and have housing that supports that, as opposed to being counter to it by sort of feeling like a prison and feeling like a barrier, like you said.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, no, there's a lot of room in the U.S. for different types of housing, different styles of housing that accommodate different types of people. And we've really only got like a small selection of housing types, and most of them are kind of bad. Like even here in New York, like apartments are, I love New York, but you know, a lot of the apartments, they're just tiny places, and you're kind of cramped in a box, and you don't really know anybody. And there needs to be more room for different styles of housing, for sure.
Ben, what would you say is the ideal housing arrangement for like a commune of soldiers in the Gunnar army?
What's the name? Kowloon Wall City? Where's the Wall City? So much of our alienation in America is because public space has been forked over to the car. And we just don't have adequate chilling zone. We don't have an adequate sort of... We've just sacrificed essentially 100% of our public space.
Mm-hmm.
It exists... It is not a place to be. It is only... You're only in public space in transit.
Mm.
And I just think it's a fucking pity, right? We deserve little espresso. We deserve a little espresso and the crossword, you know, on a bench, right? These are nice things that we deserve. And I'm optimistic that Zoran gets it. And I'm optimistic that the new head of the DOT gets it.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I really want New York to have its Paris moment, dude. I'm praying for you guys.
Deserves it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so many places that have so much potential to be turned into public space that, you know, there's the density, there's the businesses, there's the street activity, there's everything. They just have to change the way that the street is laid out. I mean, like, you know, an obvious example is Park Ave, which, you know, used to be a park, hence the name, and then since the automobile has, you know, it's now basically a freeway. Like people fly by on Park Ave in Manhattan, or also like in Chinatown. Why are there cars allowed to be in Chinatown at all? The streets are super narrow. Cars can't even get through anyway. They're just there to get in people's ways, and it's constantly congested with pedestrian traffic. So it's like, why would we give this space to, you know, the five people that are going to use it an hour and then risk mowing down a bunch of children running around? And, but I mean, New York definitely seems to be going the right way with a lot of these things. I mean, I've heard that in FIDI there is a pedestrianization plan that will turn more of the streets into pedestrian-only streets. There's already been a ton that have turned into pedestrian-only streets, and they're awesome.
You know, the policy framework couldn't be more different, right? Like, y'all are moving in the right direction. Meanwhile, over here, it's against the law to install speed cameras. Like, in Texas, it's no government or police agency can install, like, basically, no one's allowed to perform any kind of automatic enforcement of speed laws.
Mm.
That's, like, strictly against the law, despite it being empirically, like, linked with preventing traffic deaths. It's against the law to save more lives with technology here.
Yeah.
Right. And so the regulatory framework just couldn't be more different. And I envy you, bro. I envy you with your trains.
Yeah, no,
your trains.
I love living here. I feel lucky every moment that I get to experience, the great parts of New York. I mean, there's a lot of downsides, of course. I mean, you know, the subway is great; it gets you everywhere, but the speed and reliability are not there. I mean, you know, compared to other U.S. cities, maybe in many ways, it's got the speed. But you know, if I want to go, like, from here to my work is like 6 miles, something like that, and it takes me an hour. Crazy. I mean,
no, that's what's so fucked up is, like, Brooklyn could be so close to Queens.
Yeah.
If we gave one fuck. Like, it's a 30 minute bike ride. 20 minute e-bike ride.
Yeah.
Do you city bike? Do you skate? You look like you skate. Realistically.
you know, even though I'm from LA, I never really got into skating. But I do bike occasionally, but I don't, the downside with city bikes is I feel like the condition that they're kept in, a lot of the time it makes it where you have to use the electric bikes in order to get anywhere. Like, I don't know,
100%.
Two-thirds of the standard city bikes that I take, they just don't even work, and then I'm like charged. It's some crazy amount, $5 or something like that. And when I can take the train for $3, it doesn't make any sense. Like the bike things are supposed to be a cheaper alternative, at least in my head. And when I lived in Boston, I believe that's how the pricing was, at least before it was bought by Lyft, for the blue bikes in Boston. Where taking a blue bike was cheaper than taking the T anywhere, so I used to take the blue bikes everywhere. But now that I'm here, even though I'd say the cycling infrastructure here is better than the cycling infrastructure in Boston, even in spite of that, I don't want to risk my life on the city bikes with the condition that they're kept in.
I definitely found myself reaching for the e-bikes for sure. I didn't feel as safe on the regular bikes. You just can't keep up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the electric ones are great. They're amazing. And you know, the top speed of them is not like a dangerous speed, so they're very nice. But they're, you know, they're $8 or something like that. And if I want to go somewhere, go back and forth, that's $16 just to do that. You know, that's going to, like, for people that can afford that, that's amazing. But the average person needing to do that every day, it's just completely unaffordable.
If the United States government wanted to stop expending billions and billions of dollars terrorizing the world and just nut up and give everyone a scooter, we could have a real country again.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true.
The Chinese would do it. Why can't we?
Yeah, no more cars in Chinatown.
Firm,
step
one of
one.
Our firm stances on this podcast is that we're Han Chinese supremacists. So we're firmly pro-race science, and the best race is Han Chinese.
Well, my girlfriend's Han Chinese, so I'll tell her you said that.
She knows nice. It's true.
One of
she
us.
Totally
one
knows
of us. Us.
But no, I mean, it's hard to deny in this day and age that China is anything other than the greatest country in the world. Like, if you like infrastructure and you like urban planning, it's like, it's not perfect. They still have too many freeways, but they have a much more appropriate balance of investment, of public investment. Like, they actually fucking care about the people who live there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, I went to China a couple of years ago for a month, and you know, obviously the metro systems and the pedestrian infrastructure and everything like that, it's so good, and it's so beyond where we are. It's so beyond where Europe is. It's amazing. But one thing that I think often can get missed in discussions of urbanism in China is what is kind of what you mentioned of the amount of freeways in China. It really is insane. And when you're on the ground walking around, you're just walking under overpasses everywhere. And they have like, I don't know I've looked it up before. I don't think there's a word for them in English, but there's this special type of street in China that is like an elevated street above another street, and it's slightly faster than the street below it. You'd think it's a freeway, but they're slower than freeways, and they're like everywhere. You walk around Guangzhou, China, and all you see is these like freeway street things everywhere. Like the U.S. pales in comparison. It's so much worse, obviously, at all of these things. But China's got its things that it's got to work on too. But of course, as you said, in terms of funding and care about their cities and their infrastructure, they're leagues beyond.
Well, and it's interesting.
A lot of the time living in Texas, it sort of just feels like they hate us, right? So it's just like, well, I didn't die today.
Great.
Yeah, and it's intentional. We talk a lot on this podcast about how redlining and urban renewal were the Jim Crow of the 20th century. And
speaking of Robert Moses.
So true. Speaking of Robert Moses, yeah, this really ties back in. The movement that, you know, Robert Moses led and really kind of was a figurehead of was the freeway expansion projects and urban renewal, which gave us our freeways that knocked down majoritively black and brown neighborhoods, working class neighborhoods, to build freeways so that people that were moving to the suburbs in covenanted neighborhoods, you know, racially covenanted neighborhoods, could access the city more easily. And that has been the mode of our urban development basically since until, I mean, maybe this century, we've started to see some cities take, you know, steps in the other direction. But that really set the world in motion for the what we have. And that was intentionally racist policy and intentionally classist policy. They would rank neighborhoods based on like how many minorities lived in them. You can look at the reports. There's a University of Richmond resource that I really like. I can send it to you. We've talked about it before. Where it shows you, it's basically an amalgamation of all of the redlining maps, but it's in the form of an interactive map that you can explore. It's a really great tool. But it's really sad reading some of these descriptions that they wrote into these policies, because it's like, well, there's a lot of dirty Italians living in this neighborhood, not very nice, and then they give it a C ranking, and then you can't get a loan there to improve your building. Meanwhile, you also can't get a loan to move into a neighborhood because there's a racial covenant. And it's like, oh man. We did this on purpose, and when Ben says it feels like they don't care about us means the downtrodden in every facet. Like, it's intersectional with all of our other pieces. So all that to say, I'm getting worked up. We love your song, Thank You, Robert Moses. I think it hits it on the nose. We played it earlier for the listener. If he was here on the podcast with us, if his ghost rose from his cold corpse that, you know, passed in 1981... if he rose from the dead, what would you say to him?
Yeah, I mean, first thing I'd say is, how the fuck are you alive? Holy shit.
Oh my God.
But then after...
it's a ghost.
After I got past that shock, I'd probably say, like, good job on the state parks. A lot of those are really nice. What were you doing? What was this? Were you just a total piece of shit, or did you have any like genuine intent to improve society? Were you considering the fact that your decisions would have like larger ramifications than just like these people will be able to get to this place? And you know, I'm aware that a lot of the time he was aware of these ramifications, but it. You know, some of the things that he did and the effect that he had nationally, you know, I think the negative effects of what he did are so much larger than he could have predicted. I mean, you know, he tried to keep people of different income levels in New York. You know, he segregated areas and he did that whole thing, and that's horrible. But in terms of like income equality, like from a race perspective, is horrible, you know, obviously. But from an income equality perspective, you know, if you were a white middle class family, he wanted you to be able to live in the city. And he wanted wealthy people to be able to live in the city, white wealthy people and white poor people. Nobody of other races, horribly, obviously, but he did have this perspective. But even that in most U.S. cities does not exist. Like you go to the downtowns of basically every major city in the country. You know, there's a handful that have been spared, but basically every major city in the country, and they're completely torn apart. Of course. Partly influenced by what he did. I mean, very influenced by what he did, really. So I wonder genuinely if he had any idea of the larger ramifications of what he did.
Yeah. I would definitely be interested to know why he was like a racist maniac. I think like asking why is a really like kind and lovely way to come at it. I think I have to disagree about your analysis of downtowns in the provinces out here, because like in Denver, especially over the last like 20 years, like the people who live downtown are transient. And by transient, I mean they like live here for 3 to 7 years in their 20s when they have good tech jobs, good entry-level tech jobs. And like our downtown is sort of a weird corporate infested neoliberal wealth fest.
And it's not
very nice. Like I don't really like being down there, and I live pretty close to the heart of the city, but what I would describe as like the CBD. But I would say that like we've seen a movement past the decimation that policies like Robert Moses introduced. Like it was like that. Nobody lived downtown except people that had hunkered down and held onto their properties as hard as they could and had no other options, right, in these disenfranchised neighborhoods. But with the gentrification movement of the last like 20 to 30 years, I would say that like there's a whole other life in our city's downtowns. And again, I'm not like for it, but I would say that I would contest that point, I think.
Yeah, how familiar are you with reverse white flight? Have you lived any of this yourself? You said you live on the G line. Are you displacing a Bed-Stuy black family as we speak? What's going on?
I mean, I definitely know what you're talking about. I mean, I'm personally living here because it's the only place I can afford. But you know, I definitely know what you're talking about, and there has been this kind of reverse, but I don't know how much I would say. I mean, it's obviously an improvement over complete decimation and abandonment like there was in like you see in most major cities in like the 80s and the 90s, you know, it's we need a mix of income levels in cities, that's the end of my point.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And I totally agree. Like cities need to be diverse places in every sense. We need rich people in cities, obviously. Rich people are often hot people, and we definitely need hot people in cities. We just need them to like stop driving their cars everywhere and stop being, you know, terrible brainwashed monsters. But I think that I would. Oh, man, I lost my train of thought. Ben, take it.
No, if Austin, Texas were just a bunch of hot chicks riding bicycles instead of a bunch of hot chicks in Toyota Tacomas, it would be a much nicer place to live.
That's just true. Yeah, that's just the facts.
That's a beautiful sentiment.
Yeah, but it's such a complex issue, and we love that you're making, you know, comedy and music about the topic. For me, it's like one of the biggest things is we have to stop thinking about it in the same ways that we've been thinking about it. And if we can break people out of the mold and make them chuckle and make them think about something from a new perspective, even if it's a joke, it's like going to be a net positive to the world. So I just kudos to you for what you do. And I just want to flag you. You posted a reel the other day, and it was about kind of, you know, ensuring that losers did not engage with your content. Which, you know, we're definitely into over here at Are You Into Bus Stuff. This is, you know, a goon cave for only the mightiest soldiers. And we were just curious, how do we ensure that, like, losers don't start infiltrating our spaces?
Yeah, how do we keep sickos? Well, okay, no, we want to encourage sickos. We want to discourage losers.
Yeah, I mean, gatekeep everything. Are you interested in urban planning? Yeah, name 50 urban planners then. I mean, are you interested in public transit? Then name all the stops on the A line. I mean, A train. Sorry. Wow, my LA is really showing.
Are you interested in public transit? Well, then prove to me that you get hard for Robert Moses' corpse.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me what day he died. Tell me what day he died. Tell me.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it, like, obviously, in all seriousness, I think the opposite approach to gatekeeping is true, is that we need to bring people more by bringing them into the know. And, you know, if we bring people into the know, they're no longer going to be losers. So it's a net positive scenario. You know, if we make things more approachable and explain topics more clearly, I think that's how we win people over. And, you know, I think the thing with urban planning communication that I have seen is a lot of the time it can get really bogged down in details. And, you know, I love that type of stuff. I live for that type of stuff. Watching YouTube channels where they just go, like, take videos of public transit projects as they're being constructed and show how they're looking and talk about the individual details of the construction process and what the holdups are and everything like that. But the average person, they're not going to get into that. And I think we need more things that bring people into the fold and bring people into the know. And, you know, urban planning topics in reality are not that complicated and not that strange. And I think most people have the reference point to understand all of these things by just, you know, looking around them and seeing these things. It's a lot more approachable of a topic than people realize. And so I think as long as we keep trying to bring people into the know and help people on their journey of becoming more aware of urban planning and everything like that, then that's how we make sure there's no losers supporting us, you know?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And I mean, it's a testament to, like, your work. You give people a really easy in, which is jokes and music. And we do a little bit of that here on the podcast, but we're mostly for, you know, depraved sickos and desperately addicted gooners. And you're sort of approaching, casting a wider net. And so just kudos to you for making jokes, making people laugh, making people think about these topics, because you're right. A lot of people are not going to be interested in, like, how a government structures their grants to fund their CIP projects to expand a freeway. But if we can dive into that and come back out with just a pearl, like a morsel of comedy to serve up to them, I think we can fix the problem. I'm with you on it.
Definitely.
Maybe you can help us workshop our brand. So our tagline is, an army of gooners will take back the streets in the dead of night.
Okay, so elaborate on this for me.
So the youth of America, the gooners,
sure,
will take up arms.
The kids aren't
arms.
Having sex. The kids only goon.
Right.
Everyone's just gooning. The gooners will take back the streets in the dead of night. An army of gooners.
Okay.
Let me be clear.
Preferably on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, but that's not a part of the tagline. That's part of the lore, but it's not a part of the tagline.
Yeah, I mean, I can get down with that, of course. I love the concept of just everybody getting together and just being like, all right, fuck this, we gotta change stuff. We can't just let this be. We have to make things better.
Well, we just don't see any media in the world that is adequate to address the scale of the crisis. We don't perceive any of these movements to be particularly effective. So the best we can come up with
is an army of
gooners will take back the streets in the dead of night. We're trying to galvanize the youth of America to overthrow the fascist pig government.
Yeah, no, that's definitely best case scenario, I think.
It's just difficult because we go back and forth because gooning is, you know, a socially outcast thing to do. Ben has described the gooners as maladjusted. And it's just when we associate ourselves with such a repulsive object, how do we grow a bigger audience? How do we cast a wider net if that is tied to our identity that, you know, repulses so many people?
Are we losers?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, I think one thing is, you know, there are so many people that are gooners. I mean, so many people that are, you know, stuck at home, just, you know, gooning all day, and that have, you know, like nothing else to do because of, you know, I mean, largely because of the way our cities are set up, where it's really difficult to make friends without some sort of religious obligation, or education or work. Like, these are kind of the three places that we have to make friends, that doesn't work for everybody. You know, some people are left out there, and so I think there's a large enough group of those people. There's a large enough group of gooners in this country, in this world, really, that I think you got a good group to pull from.
You hear that, government? You've left a whole demographic of people behind with your evil policies. You have left millions, nay billions, of gooners on their couches, ready to be activated by a voice that calls them to power.
I think you're the first person to actually understand. You're the first person to articulate it in full without, like, hand-holding. 'Cause it's so true that the urban form is what makes us so fucking antisocial and fat and miserable and depressed. And it's like we're so cripplingly lonely as a society.
Yeah.
Where in California, where in LA are you from? What racial covenant community are you
do you hail from?
So when I was a kid, we moved around quite a bit. I lived in Santa Clarita, Pasadena, Westwood, Long Beach, Los Alamitos, Seal Beach, Lancaster, Santa Clarita, Marina del Rey, Santa Monica. Yeah, everything. I've seen, you know, like very city walkable parts of LA. And I've seen deep suburbia. I've seen what I would say is the deepest suburbia in Los Angeles. In the LA region, I guess, if you will. Which is Lancaster, California.
Lancaster.
Googling.
I don't know. Shout out like Rancho Cucamonga. Shout out San Fernando Valley for like deep suburbanism.
Well, Lancaster's past that. Lancaster
is, I would almost describe it as exurban in that it's on the other side of the mountains, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, well, you've got like the LA Basin, right? And then the first removal is the San Fernando Valley. And then the second removal is Santa Clarita. That's past another set of mountains. And then past another very, very wide set of mountains is Lancaster and Palmdale, the Antelope Valley.
Right, it's adjacent to Palmdale. Right.
Yes. And, you know, it's really, really far from Los Angeles. but it is a place where most people commute to Los Angeles. Because, you know, I mean, the two largest employers are there, which is like Edwards Air Force Base, I believe, and all the aerospace companies, Northrop and all these, you know, companies that we might have mixed feelings about. I think the majority of people actually commute to Los Angeles. And if I remember correctly, Lancaster and Palmdale have two of the highest average commute times. It's something like the average commute for people, for Lancastrians, is an hour and a half, I think, which is crazy. The average, think about the people that are outliers for that. There's people that their average commute is like 2.5-3 hours. Like,
and this isn't a car, mind you.
Yeah.
I've had some commutes in Denver that were like 2 hours long to go like 6 miles, but
yeah, don't get me started on the fucking bus.
Yeah.
Good God.
No, this colors me a little bit, but I was a fairly successful young person. I did theater when I was very young, and I did a lot of like commercials and like films when I was very young. And my family, we were toying with the idea of moving to Los Angeles, and my dad just abhors anything that he would consider the city. And we once spent an afternoon driving around Palmdale looking at houses, and my mom was crying by the end of the day because she could not imagine living there. And it was just, it is like a very, very bleak suburban environment. And
really? You don't even get
the amenity of being like close-ish to the city, actually. There's this like insanity for me that lives in Los Angeles. And that is part of it, that it has these like appendages that are like still LA. Like you still call them LA. But like Palmdale and Lancaster, without the automobile, are not practical to get to Los Angeles.
Like, I feel like you don't move to LA unless you think your gay son is going to be famous.
Exactly. And then we didn't, and we moved to Texas, and I met Ben, and now I'm famous in his heart.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Love of my life.
Yeah.
The love of my life.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy how large the concept of Los Angeles is. It really is different than so many other cities where, you know, there's like the main city and then the rest, which is suburbs. LA is just all of that. It's all the suburbs. It's all these little towns. And you could like people in LA would consider, you know, Riverside and San Bernardino to be part of LA. People in Riverside and San Bernardino might be like, "Oh, we're better than LA," but they work in LA.
We're better than LA.
Oh, people that far out, they really believe some stuff. You know, people all the way up in Lancaster, that's part of the greater LA area. There are people in Santa Barbara that commute to Los Angeles. Usually in their helicopters, as far as I've heard, it's crazy how truly gigantic and sprawling Los Angeles is.
Beating heart of modern civilization, of modernism. Like, LA is for me like the embodiment of the modernist movement, which like I would center around the automobile. I think that it is like the center. It's the emanating point of the culture. Like I think Denver is Los Angeles sometimes. Denver is just the suburb of Los Angeles or New York, depending on how you look at it.
They didn't revolutionize destroying a black community to create transportation infrastructure. That's like squarely on New York. They might have perfected it. They might have popularized it. They might have made it cool. But goodness.
The practice definitely invented in New York, but I mean, the neighborhood that they knocked down to build the Dodgers Stadium, that's one of the clearest examples of Robert Moses-esque applications to suburban form, or to urban form, particularly in like central Los Angeles.
Yeah.
We were all doing it. It was cool at the time. Everybody's
doing it. See that ragtime couple over there?
It's not a big deal.
Watch them knock those poor people's houses down.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree, and yeah, and you can see how, especially with like suburbs, Los Angeles kind of prototyped in many areas what it was one of those cities that prototyped a lot of the way that suburbs are today and the way that freeways are today and everything like that, you know, LA has had many phases where it has been it's been important in many eras, and it's been wildly different from like an urban form perspective in many eras. And one thing that I hope for the city of Los Angeles, for the greater LA area, is that it continues to trend in a more urbanist direction and continues to build out the metro system, continues to allow higher density development, continues to do all of these things, and we see neighborhoods improve and downtown areas improve, and it can become a model for the opposite of what it was a model for before. And it can become this model for how to, one of the good ways to fix the ways that every city in the U.S. is messed up. You know, even New York.
Yeah, they could be a leader.
Yeah, yeah. And even New York, like once you get outside of the city, it's all really deep suburbia. You know, you go on to Long Island, the entirety of Long Island, this island, basically the length of Massachusetts, is just suburbs to New York. So, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, it's endless. It's endless.
Preach.
Yeah.
Austin is 1 square mile of city and 360 square miles of suburb. Like, unless you're north of Zero Street, south of 19th Street, and then, like, basically the same distance east-west, you're in the city. And then everything else is, like, you might as well just be in San Bernardino.
The city of Denver has reasonably good urban bones. Anything that was developed, you know, within, I don't know, I guess everything pre-war, there was enough pre-war development and they were intentional enough and there was enough draw of employment and recreation and all the other reasons why people came to Denver. That the form is pretty decent. We had an amazing streetcar network for many years, which you can feel the legacy of. But even in some of the nicer places, you can feel the suburban form of it. You don't feel particularly urban. And then everywhere else in the metro is tough. It's not quite as, I think, bad a ratio just by square mileage as Austin. I would say the urban parts of Austin are better and the suburban parts of Denver are better. But it's really rough. It's really rough.
If you want to learn more about
Los Angeles, we had John from Transiting LA. I don't know if you've ever followed his channel on the podcast. I don't know, 4 or 5 episodes ago. And he is an expert in like the history of like Los Angeles history. So I highly recommend his channel and particularly our conversation with him. I guess we can't get away from LA on the podcast. It's interesting. It's interesting how it always echoes back.
Yeah, it's a strange and interesting place.
America's problem child.
Certainly.
I think the thing that it comes back to for me is that LA is like, it has a higher transit mode share than pretty much all cities in America, except for like 10. It's got the population density of Amsterdam. It's got good weather 98% of the whole year. It could be paradise. Like, you could bike from Santa Monica to downtown LA in an hour if it weren't a suicide mission. You know?
Yeah.
And it's just, like, New York is like, oh, holy shit, it's so small. You could bike anywhere in the city in an hour if it were safe to do so, right? And normies would do so if it were safe to do so. And L.A., even big old sprawling L.A. could sustain so much fucking bike traffic. It's not even funny. It's flat. It's beautiful. It's dense. It's got transit service that people use. God, it just gets
and it's got
going,
so
man.
Much culture and so many different flavors of neighborhood and so many different amenities that there's reasons to get around. There's
culturally diverse,
attractors,
economically
diverse,
diversity. Artistic. We have a soft spot for the Latinos. I know we talk big on the Chinese, but this podcast is also very pro-Latino.
No, many great Latino neighborhoods in Los Angeles. Great food, great culture, great music, everything.
Yeah, one of the greatest cities. I've been lucky. I've spent a fair bit of time there in the last year on some contracts, and I always love being in LA. I went there as a kid, and it is truly a magnificent city, and I hope we'll see it evolve over the course of our lives. But Ben, I'm feeling the need for some keys, baby. We've already overstayed our welcome with Pondless.
Well, I want our Gunnarino guest to jam for us. I don't want to be a I would love to request some entertainment from our dear guest, but I can't make you do anything. Because if you went to the Berklee School of fucking music, you're going to be like, holy shit, this guy can't play the piano at all.
I do think it's a lovely, lovely parallel between the two of you that you like both found punkness through music and it led you both to urban planning.
You're actually like a real musician. I feel very self-conscious.
I mean, I could move my piano a little bit and see if I can do something for you guys.
I know you also said that you have neighbors and you don't want to disturb them, so please do not feel put on the spot.
It might be a little bit late. I don't know if I should be making too much noise, so.
Okay. Yeah, that's okay. We can, Ben, can you cook us up something just real simple? Even if it's
just the drum kit. Yeah. Goon for it, boys.
Come on, Big Daddy Ben. This is Big Daddy Ben Carnero and our pretty, pretty Pondless on the podcast with you, your auntie, Lucas Riley. And we are just so grateful to have you here, listener, listening to the sweet, sweet tunes from Ben
will be
Pondless
free. The Gooners will be free.
Oh, they're gonna be free.
Because the government will not stop us. Oh, the government will fall. I said the Gooners.
We're talking to you.
Free. Oh, the Gooners will take back the streets.
So yeah, that's what we do. I hope you don't regret coming on the podcast.
No, of course.
That's kind of our shtick.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, let's get together again. I mean, if you're ever out in Denver, please hit me up. I won't speak for Ben, but I feel like if we all got together, we could maybe really make some music and talk through things and, you know, see what we could spiral out to cast a wider net, as you put it. But yeah, keep doing what you're doing, man. We're big fans. Hopefully the listeners will agree. You can find Pondless really anywhere that you're looking for music or content. But in particular, we'll link to his Linktree in the notes. I think we saw, Linktree, it's just Linktree at Pondless Music. So we'll link that in the show notes. Anything else you'd want to say to our listeners, Pondless, before you, frolic off to dream and, finish your evening with some thoughts of that sweet Robert Moses corpse?
Anything you want to say to the sickos and porno addicts that we call our loyal fan base?
If you're in New York, especially if you're a Gooner, on May 2nd, I've got a show at Wonderville in Brooklyn, and it'll be a great time. It'll be fun music. We'll be dancing around. Wonderville is great. It's a bar arcade. So if you're in the area, please come by.
Well, I hope I wasn't too weird. He was really nice.
I feel like whenever we have a guest, you like get straight. You like your weirdness turns way down. You start like using full sentences. You don't do any Gooner army wrangling. I have to like do the gesturing.
Well, that's not the feedback I expected you to give, but heard.
Yeah, I feel like you're always like really well-spoken and solid with the guests, but I also don't have a good barometer. I think my brain has been melted by your performance on this podcast.
My brain has been melted by how you are.
Yeah, I'm like gaslit by your
No, he was a real sweetie. What a nice guy.
Yeah, what a sweet guy. Yeah,
what
excellent.
Nice dude.
Excellent conversation.
Yeah, and he's definitely super aligned with what we do. Yep. I feel bad for not having bumped any of his banging ass music, but we'll edit it into the pod Ruski.
Oh yeah! Just do it.
Gooners,
yeah, yeah.
Goon for me, baby. Goon for me, baby. Goon for me, baby.
I wanna goon in New York.
Do you want a goon? I want a goon for you, baby. I want a goon for you now. Goon with me. Goon with me. Ow. I want a goon.
You know that one?
I wanna take back goon. The streets and goon. I want a goon. I wanna take back the streets.
The streets, I know. I want a goon.
I want a goon to take back the streets.
Yeah, now that he's gone, one sec.
I told you, listener. It was just me and Ben, me and sweet Ben. We're gonna make sweet tunes and the freshest comedy.
What am I gonna do? I haven't listened to his music. He won't play it because he's like in a New York apartment and it's 9:30 p.m. and he's like a sweet boy. That is nasty as fuck. What the fuck am I supposed to do with that?
There we go. No, I don't know if I like. Okay. Gooners, how I yearn to be free. How I want the government to fall.
Wanna take back the streets in the dead of night.
I want to be free.
Take them back. I want the streets to be mine. I wanna be outside nearly all of the time. I said Gooner. I said Gooners. How I want to be free. How I want to be free. The government has got me down for too long, so I will overthrow them with my song. Oh, Gooners, if
take back the streets now.
How do you feel, Gooners?
You gotta take them back now.
Do you wanna be free?
You wanna be free. Or do you want to be a little piggy, 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 fat, fat, fat piggy boy? Oink, 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 oink. Do you want to be a little fat, worthless piggy? Or do you want to be a brave, strong, big-dicked American? Well, I know what I want to be, Gooners. I want to be big. I want to be rock hard. And I want to be free, baby, free. Because the government can't tell me what to do.
Anyway. I'm the colonel of the Gooner Army, Gooner McGoober. And this is Are You Into Bus Stuff? The only comedy podcast ostensibly about dying in traffic and in practice about being severely addicted to internet pornography. My name is Gooner McGoober. I'm falling apart.
I've been driving around. Traffic's been such hell lately. If only there was a way. County Metropolitan Transportation Authority. MTA. Metropolitan Transportation.